Welcome to Teacher Tales, where the chalk meets the cheese. I'm Glenn Bryant, your host on this weekly podcast, here to share the fun, the fails, and the fantastic moments from classrooms everywhere. Whether you're an educator or you just love a good story, you're in the right place. Stick around, like, subscribe, and share. You don't want to miss a single laugh or lesson. Welcome to Teacher Tales. I'm joined today by Coach. If I had to give some of these episodes a title, it would be Living Legends, or so he's one of the people when you think about coaching in North Alabama, especially in basketball, his name comes to mind. Coach Conwell, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of how you got into education and coaching, and journey along the way.
Yeah, I was. I went to high school at Tremont, Mississippi. We had a good, real good girls basketball team, and of course didn't have football. I had junior high football a couple of years, so just always really loved basketball, loved the game. Wasn't a very good player, so I knew that if I wanted to stay involved in it, you know, it was gonna obviously wasn't gonna play in college. I certainly wasn't gonna play pro basketball. So I knew for a long time that I wanted to coach. So my wife ends up. Which obviously wasn't married then, but we had dated in high school. So she goes to UNA to play basketball for Wayne Bird. And I go to UNA too. And I got into coaching as far as actually out there coaching with Coach Bird there at UNA. And then I went to Brooks, I think it was 1994, 95, I believe it's correct. It would be correct. And I helped Mike Willis there, who was just an unbelievable basketball coach in person. And then I went to Speak. I got hired in November of 95, and that was my first job. In the first 2 years, I was there 4 years. The first 2 years, I coached boys and girls. And the last 2 years I was there, I just coached the girls. Bradley Hembry had come on, and he did the boys. It was just really, it was too much trying to do it, especially the way I practiced then. And so then in the fall of 99, I went to Hatton, and then, I was there all the way till I ended up going to Franklin County in October of 2021. But I went to Hubbard, I think it was in 2012, that August, and I started teaching there, or coaching there rather. And I believe it was 2014. I think I coached there 6 or 7 seasons. And then, in October of 2021, I had give up coaching there. So then in October 2021, the job come open at Tharptown under a friend of mine, Bart Moss. And so I ended up taking that, and I coached there 2 years. And then I retired. Kind of figured Bart was probably going to move, and you never know what you're going to get with a, you know, new principal. So I got a good one. So, but you don't know. I didn't know at the time. And I thought about staying another year, but when I found out he was probably going to leave, I would have hidden. Turned my retirement in, and I retired June the 1st of 2023.
So why education and then why coaching in particular? Now, I know for me, I didn't go into education to be a coach. It was kind of thrust on me. You're a male and you're at a school where
you're not tenured.
You got to do something to add value to your campus. And I wound up falling in love with it, because you could relate to kids in a way that was different
exactly
in the classroom. So what was it about coaching for you that was the draw?
It was, well, I really loved, I just was fanatic about the game of basketball. And so that was a big part of it. And I'm kind of the opposite, and I'll just be honest. I went into it more for the coaching part of it. But the relationships, you know, you could have, you know, just, you know, the personal relationships, you know, really getting to know the kids. It's hard to really know, you know, somebody that well and develop a real relationship, you know, in the classroom, particularly if you only, you know, have them, you know, 1 year or whatever. But it was really the relationships, and, you know, some of them, you know, I still see and talk to all the time now. That was from, you know, 30 years ago. And just like November, me and some of my players that played for me at Hubbard, we're going to Clarksdale to listen to the blues one weekend. So, you know, those things, that's the best part, the best thing I ever took out of the whole education thing was the relationship with players and
you
know,
had
other
some
teachers.
Pretty good teams.
Yeah, I had some pretty good teams and had some really bad teams too.
Well, that comes with the territory. So when you think about it, none of us get where we are without a little help along the way. So
exactly.
Who are some of those folks that, you know, if you look back on time and you go, hey, if it hadn't been for your kindness, you know, I probably wouldn't have.
Oh, yeah. That's
the opportunity that you gave me to learn from you. And who are some of those
folks? And I know I'll leave some out. Wayne Bird, definitely. He took a chance on me when Linda was actually, after she had quit playing at UNA, he allowed me to coach and help him. And he actually let me coach, let me fail. He gave me a lot of freedom. And we ended up going to the Final Four, and you know that gives you kind of some opportunities. Donnie Roberts, that was at Red Bay for so long, who had been at Tremont where I went to high school when I was in elementary. Mike Willis was a huge one. You know, even though I was only there with him a year, you know, we still talked all the time. I would still, all the way up through the end of my career, I would still, you know, call him and talk to him. He went with me the year we went to the Final Four. We went down to watch South Lamar in Pickens County, and he had been out of it for a long time, and he went with me. He just and he had never played basketball. He said had he been able to get he was a football player and wanted to coach football. So when they put basketball on him, junior high, I believe it was, at Sheffield when he first started, he said, I would have quit if I could have got hired at TBA or Reynolds or wherever it was. And I didn't get hired, and so you know nothing about it. It'd be like springing baseball or football on me, and but he became he was one of the best that I've ever saw. He could get more out of what he had than anybody that I've ever been around.
Well, all right, thank you for being with us today.
Enjoyed it, or enjoying it.
Well, yeah, it ain't over yet.
No.
All right, we're back, and it's time for our long form interview. Also, run through these questions and just. Do the best you can. What's the most memorable moment a student made you laugh, and how did that moment impact your teaching?
Well, it was, and I thought about this one, and there's several, but my favorite one was, I think it was the next to the last year that I coached at Hubbard, and it was toward the end of the season, so you're shorter practices and stuff, and we're not really running anymore. And so I don't know how it comes up, and I'd gotten in good shape for a while, and I was in decent shape then. I would certainly not even attempt it now. So something comes up, me and my assistant, who are still good friends, Craig Stover, the kids kind of encourage us to race. I think we did a down and back. I'm sure we didn't do much more than that. So we go down and back, and somehow or another, I end up winning. So then one of my big linemen, who was a really good football player and a good basketball player for me, one of the funniest kids ever. I'm not going to call names on anything, but they'll know who I'm talking about. So, and I was always on him when we did run sprints, because I always knew he could do more. He said, Coach, I'm doing all I can. So we get done. He says, Coach, I could outrun you. I said, I tell you what, big boy, just get your tail on the line. Let's go. And I hadn't recovered anyway, which I don't think would have mattered. But so I'm still kind of a little bit winded from the sprint before. So we're going to do a down and back. So we take off. And when I get to about half court, so, you know, full size court, unlike this one, he's at about the foul line ahead of me already. And I'm determined I'm not going to, if I die, I'm not going to lose to him, because they're going to wear my tail out. And I get to the baseline, and he's coming back. And when I start coming back, right before I get to half court, about the timeline on the other end, it's just like you've always heard of boxers lost their legs. Well, I could tell them I had no control of my legs. I get to about half court, and I can't even do anything. I just fall face plant right down. So that's it just kind of, we'd been struggling with some injuries and this and that, not playing particularly well at that time. It just kind of lightened the mood, and everybody got, you know, after a while I got a good laugh out of it, but it just kind of lightened the mood and everything else. And just you know, the kids, we all still laugh about it.
You can't do that kind of thing if you take yourself too serious.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, and you couldn't just challenge somebody, you know, the way we would, you know, we had the type of relationship where, you know, I could say, get your big tail on the line, you know, because that was just, you know, we had enough of a relationship, you know, we could, you know, pick at each other like that.
So you had a pretty good career. Thinking back, if you could give your younger teacher self one piece of advice, what would it be, and why would you give them that advice?
Well, the most important thing that I would tell myself, and I would tell a younger teacher now that was starting, as you, you know, like you just mentioned a second ago, is not to take yourself too serious. It's a very important job, but it's still just a job. If you fail dead today, there's going to be a sub there for you tomorrow. And I was not able, and I still really regret this more than anything, I was not able to compartmentalize things. I was just obsessed with basketball. And so even when I was at home with my wife and kids, I was there physically, but I wasn't there mentally. And it doesn't make you any more effective. In my mind, that was the only way that you had to really just live it. And it doesn't make you any more effective. And I would want to, and I relate most things to coaching, but I would want to, I wish I would have understood more back then, particularly when I was younger, that, you know, it's your job, it's your really deep passion. But for a lot of them, you know, basketball may be the third or fourth most important thing, just sports related. And it was a game to them. And I didn't do a good job of understanding that for most of my career. But I would tell myself, you know, make sure that when you're away from that gym, you're away from that school, that, you know, you're there with your family mentally, not as well as physically. And you're not just sitting there thinking about, you know, how to avoid losing another game. And I would just along those lines, I was very fortunate that I worked for a lot of good principals and good superintendents. Most of them were really, really good. And if I was a young teacher or a young coach, and I've told some of them this, and some of them, I don't know that it was because of what I told them, but I've told some that were in situations, usually coaching, I'd say, hey, when you get the chance, you need to get out of here. You're going to have trouble being successful, you know, where you are. And I know it's a big passion for you. And, but if you're somewhere, everything starts at the top. So if you're somewhere in, anywhere I was where we had some success, it was more, I attribute more to obviously the players, which goes back to the parents, and then the administration. If you don't have good administration, it don't matter how good of players you have or whatever else. If they're not going to support you, you're not going to be, you can't be successful. You might have a successful, you know, have a good year or whatever, but you can't have any success long-term without the backing of that principal. And so I would tell, you know, a young teacher or a young coach that if you, if you're not being supported, the first chance you get, you need to get on, because it doesn't tend supported. To get better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that. That's great advice. So what's the craziest thing you've ever done? And in your case, it'll be players, to keep your players engaged, and did it work, or students engaged, and did it work?
Well, actually, this one was students, and it was toward, those kids have just started teaching now. They're in there about second year of teaching, so 5 or 6 years ago, I guess, at Hatton. So I'm a big Waylon Jennings fan, so I would, and like on my Facebook, it's, you know, Hoss is the nickname. So I had a crew, and so I would just make them, they had to call me Hoss, had to call each other Hoss, or we wouldn't respond. So that just, they kind of, you know, normally you talk to them, they didn't pay any attention, but they would kind of perk up. You know, you'd say, hey, Hoss, what are you doing back there, or whatever. So that kind of is simple, but it was, they got a kick out of it. You'd even hear them in the hall, you know, calling each other that.
Okay, Hoss. So how do you stay motivated on those days when nothing seems to go right?
I was always motivated more by failure, you know, or maybe the fear of failure than I ever was by success. You know, I think if you're not real careful, whether you're a teacher, or coach, player, whatever, you know, success can really soften you. You know, you just think, well, I had
Nick
success.
Saban calls it rat poison.
Right. You know, I had success this last game, or I had success last season, or the last place I was at. So I'm just going to be successful the next place, or the next game, or the next season. And it doesn't work like that. I think it was Dick Bennett that coached at Wisconsin, Tony Bennett's dad. I think he said, you know, success dilutes, you know, wash your hands of success. So, you know, I would, when things were going bad, it seemed like, I would sit down, and every time before I went to another, after I would finish a job, you know, a coaching job, I would write down, you know, what can I do better at the next place I am. So I would just, the way I stayed motivated was just trying to figure out a way to do things to be more effective with time. I actually went, I don't coach football at all, not an Alabama fan. I'm a huge Nick Saban fan. And I went with the staff at Hatton, Denton Bowling, you know, down to watch Nick Saban practice and just watch their management of time, you know, how efficiently they use their time with that many moving pieces. It was just, it was amazing to me. And so I would just try to figure out ways to keep myself motivated, you know, to be more efficient with my time. I realized that the shorter practices as I got older were better, but they had to be extremely efficient in order to do that. So I would just, you know, I stayed motivated by trying to figure out ways to do things more effectively.
Can you share a time when a student success story reminded you why you became a teacher?
Yes. Had a kid back earlier in my coaching career, and I'm not, probably wouldn't matter. They probably wouldn't care if I use their name, but I'm not going to use names today because I didn't get permission from any of them. And the kid had a difficult home life, and so would miss practice and had, you know, some discipline issues, and that was real early in my career, and I was really probably too strict then, and I almost kicked the kid off different times, and I, you know, would have a lot of talks with him, tried to help him. But the kid goes on, you know, gets married, has kids. He's written a book or two now, and I could not have imagined that when he was a younger kid, and I, you know, thinking, you know, I came so close to kicking him off, and had I kicked him off, would he have done, you know, would he have went to the streets, you know, instead of going on and being, you know, successful. I don't attribute anything I did to his success, but I wonder, had I not stuck it out with him, could I have hindered, you know, set him back, and, you know, put him in a worse position than what he was already in.
I'm glad you didn't kick him off.
Me too.
So what's the funniest misunderstanding or miscommunication that you've ever had with a student?
This is a classic. We discussed this earlier, so I got to tell it in a way that's podcast
the Sunday school version.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're not on Howard Stern. So I'm in Hatton, and I'm teaching health, and Vicki Counts is teaching a health class or two also. I think at the time Vicki was assistant principal as well. So we're on, it would have been ninth grade. So we're on, I'm again teaching health. So we're on reproduction, human reproduction. So I have a mixed class, boys and girls. So the day before it was female reproduction. Of course, they're trying to be funny and ask things that they know the answer to, but you know how they're going to be. And again, it's a little different if I just had boys, but I got both of them. So I tell them the next day when I come in, sit down, call row. And I said, look, I had some definitions handed out or on the board or whatever. I said, we're going to do these definitions. I said, do not ask any questions about this material. I said, if you have a legitimate question, boys, after class, you come ask me after class privately. Don't be yelling out things and asking questions in here because I knew what they were doing before. And I said, girls, if you have one, then you can go talk to Miss Counts after class. So now we're on male reproduction. So no sooner than I get it out of my mouth to not ask questions, this girl raises her hand before I can say no, she asks a question. I just get up and I sit there, and the kids, of course, just go, they're just hysterical. And I just get up and I sit there for, I don't know what to do. And we're in the old building at Hatton. I'm just a couple doors down from the office. So I walk down into the office. Of course, it's right in the middle of class. Mr. Hancock said, Coach, what are you doing? I tell him what happened. I said, I don't know if I can ever go back in there or not. So that, and I can't go into details, but the ones that will hear it from there, they know that one well.
Well, all right. How do you inspire students who are struggling both academically and personally?
I think you've got to try to help them figure out how to be, you know, have some self-discipline and self-motivation. You know, it can't just be, well, if you do this, you know, I'll buy this for you, or I'll do this for you, you know, as a parent or, you know, whatever. And you just try to figure out how to, you know, show them, you know, just talk to them about, you know, if you would change some behavior, you know, if you could just be dependable, if you could be on time, if you would just, you know, stay out of trouble. There's just, you know, there's so many opportunities for you, but you know, if you keep going the way you're going, you know, you're not dependable. You're not on time. You're in discipline problems all the time. You know, that's just not going to work. There's always going to be, you know, you think now, well, this guy here, this teacher, this principal or whatever is telling me what to do. Well, there's always going to be somebody telling you what to do. So you've got to learn, you know, how to adjust to that and, you know, and change your behaviors, but it's got to be something that you take ownership of. You know, it can't be something that where somebody else is always having to discipline you or trying to point you in the right direction. You've got to learn to take ownership of the things, the mistakes that you make.
All right. If teaching were a superhero job, what would your superpower be and how did you use it in the classroom?
Thought about that one. And it would be X-ray vision, you know, from the standpoint that I don't care where you sit, and I've tried this, seating arrangement, that seating arrangement and everything. I'm to the classroom now. And no matter what, there's going to be some you can't see. And now the cell phones are, and the distraction of the cell phone is bad enough. But the worst part of the cell phones in the schools, and I think any teacher administrator will tell you this, especially administrators, is the problem it leads to, you know, the bullying, the cyberbullying, the things that's, you know, the distractions are bad enough, but almost everything starts on social media. Somebody said something I'm not on Snapchat. They said something on Snapchat, or they said something on Facebook or whatever it might be. And that's where almost all of your problems go to. So, and now I never thought about this. This happened recently while I was subbing. And my wife's actually got one. I don't have one, but you know, the watch has got the, well, I never thought about that. You know, I'd watch for phones because, you know, I know what a problem it can be. And I would try to really watch for phones, but this kid's on their watch. I hadn't thought about it. You know, I knew it, but it just hadn't, that was the first time I guess that I had actually seen that being done. Right. And it's just, you know, to be able to see and hopefully stop some of that, because that's where so many of your problems come from, just like the, you know, where people are threatening to, you know, do things at the school that starts on social media.
I always believe now, and when I was in the military, the Navy had rooms that were called skiffs, and they would scramble cell phone signals. You couldn't use your cell phone.
Right.
I hadn't figured out why schools had the scrambling device is not that expensive and it's not that big. And so I hadn't figured out why schools haven't started scrambling, cell phone signals, other than that probably they don't want to offend their teachers so that their teachers
can. Yeah. And that's probably a good idea. You know, the only negative I could think about that would be if you're in a situation where you've got a,
yeah,
you know, intruder, or active shooter or something, and then, you know, trying to get in touch. I don't know if that's why. I didn't really know about the scrambling things, you know, that you're talking about. That might not be a bad idea.
Well, thank you for sitting down with us today.
I enjoyed it. I thank you for having me.
We'll be right back for story time.
All right, we're back.
It's story time. This is that time of the where he gets to just tell whatever story he wants to tell. So, Coach,
I'm going to tell two, and neither one are really long. So, it was this past Friday when it got so rough.
Yeah.
All right, so my little granddaughter, she's in first grade at Moorville Elementary now. So, she's scared, really scared of storms. She'd had a bad experience when she was even younger. And so I said, you know, I had to work half a day that day at Lauderdale County subbing. So I said, well, I'll come on as soon as I get out at 11:30, I'll come pick her up. So I go in and pick her up, and you got to, you know, they let you in, and then you're in the little lobby there, and the receptionist is right there. So I hand them my license, and they call her, and I'm sitting there waiting. And as I'm waiting, and the receptionist, like right here where the camera is, a parent comes in, another parent to get their kids. And so I see her coming through the doors, which are long. I see her coming up the hall there. And of course, you know, granddaughter, you can't wait to see her. And she's got her little dress on. She looks so pretty. And I said, yeah, I'm just sitting there thinking, I can't wait to hug that little girl. She comes walking out, and I try to hug her. And she talks loud anyway. And she says, you can't just grab people up at school. And the parent and the receptionist, they look at me like I'm a cross between Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy. So we get out there, and she tells me again. I said, Yeah, well, I understand that, but I'm not just grabbing any kid. I was trying to hug my own granddaughter. I wouldn't have just grabbed a random kid.
That is funny.
I was thinking about a story this morning. So one of the funny ones, I guess it was after 2003 or 2004 season. We had Ryan Harrison, Donovan Hand, and all them, and Dexter Rutherford was superintendent. And Kofia was coaching the girls. I think that might have been her last season. But anyway, we'd had a good season. So, you know, again, you get opportunities. So I get a couple of phone calls, and me and my buddies would always prank each other. And there's no real, not much caller ID. And I didn't have a cell phone at that time, I don't think. Well, so I get a first call. This guy calls me, and we had played at Wallace. And he tells me that he's with the Board of Education at Winfield City Schools, or Winfield School. And it's a boy's job. They were just going to open that new gym. And would I be interested? Well, I had enough about me not to. I thought it could be. I didn't believe it at all, because I hadn't interviewed. I didn't know it. Didn't even know the job was open. And you know, no Facebook or nothing then. And so I played along a little bit, but I didn't really buy it. Well, then that afternoon, I did have caller ID on my home phone. That afternoon, I get a call, and it says Winfield City Board of Education, and it's the superintendent. So he asked me about it. So thankfully I didn't hurt myself too bad. So I go down to interview. I believe it was in the summer. So that my girls are little, like I said, this is 2003 or 2004. I forget which one. And so, don't have anybody to watch the kids up there. And, so I get Dexter, who's the superintendent, and Kofia, his wife. Of course, I had told him, you know, I was going to interview. Their son was going to be a senior the next year, Jesse. And so I said, hey, you know, I'm going to interview. I said, I hate to ask. I said, but y'all watch the kids. So we get down there and we're interviewing. And then the superintendent, the principal, and maybe a board member or something's in there. And so they asked me, said, well, have you talked to your boss, you know, superintendent? Have you mentioned that this is a possibility? I said, ironically, I said, I just thought about this might be. This might be a really bad thing because they won't be gone so bad. I said, actually, the superintendent and his wife are watching my kids right now. So that was a pretty good one. I still think about that, you know, now that, you know, I thought, boy, it's real friendly. And then I thought, well, maybe it wouldn't. Maybe they were trying to help me move along, but no, they were really good and still good friends.
Well, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy retired schedule to be with us today. If you know a teacher like retired or still serving, one of the living legends or one of the serving legends that would make a great interview for Teacher Tales, please just drop me a link in the comment below. All I need is the school that they work at or their email address, and I'll take care of the rest. Thank you for joining us. That's this week's episode.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Teacher Tales. If you are inspired, motivated, or just had a good laugh, be sure to subscribe and share this podcast with your friends. And if you know a good teacher who has a story to tell, I'd love to hear from them. Send me an email at motivatedinspiration@gmail.com with your suggestion. Remember, whether you're in the classroom, at home, or out in the world, keep spreading the joy of learning. Until next time, keep those stories alive.